Good morning.
Good morning
to everyone. So, my talk today is called Your Zazen is Buddha. Is that what's on the program?
Yes.
Good. We run a tight ship around here. And so, it's called Your Zazen is Buddha, and my original intention, the title I had in my head, was Your Zazen is Buddha's Zazen. But I type very slowly. And so as I was typing the title with my hunt and peck system, by the time I got to Your Zazen is Buddha, I realized that's enough. So I didn't finish the sentence. And the second Zazen was extra. So I'm leaving it as it is. Your Zazen is Buddha. There's a chapter in the book, Appreciate Your Life, by Maizumi. Taizan Maizumi Roshi. Some of you may know that name. And one of his chapters is Your Zazen is Buddha's Zazen. And I've read that chapter probably a dozen times. And that's the seed of the idea. And I'm going to start this morning with two stories from a collection of stories called Tales from the Magic Monastery by Theophane the Monk. He's a Franciscan monk, and so these stories come out of his experience in Christian contemplative practice, but they don't sound anything like what I would normally expect Christian stories to sound like. They have a very Zen type of feel to them to me. And the first story is called The Original Sound. I asked an old monk, "How long have you been here at the monastery?" "Forever," he answered. I smiled. "Oh, 50 years, Father?" "Forever." "Oh, did you know Saint Benedict?" "We are novices together." "Did you know Jesus?" "He and I converse every day." I threw away my silly smile, I fell to my knees, and I clutched his hand. "Father," I whispered, "did you hear the original sound?" He answered, "I am listening to the original sound." And the second story is called No Distance. When I first arrived at the monastery, I asked each of the monks that I met this question: "What great blunder have you made?" One answered, "There was a stone in my room, and I did not love it." Another said, "They called me a Christian, but I did not become Christ." I asked the first, "Well, what did you mean? I don't understand. You didn't love that stone." "I just didn't love it. I was close to redeeming the whole world, but I looked down on that stone." And I asked the second, "You did not become Christ? Is one supposed to become Christ?" He said, "I kept putting distance between myself and him by seeking, by praying, by reading. I kept deploring the distance, but I never realized that I was creating it." "But," I insisted, "is one really supposed to become Christ?" He answered, "No distance." So, these are both, they sound to me like good Zen stories. And in a way, I think they're saying the very same thing. No distance, no gap. And for those of you who've been hanging around Zen Center for a while or are familiar with Zen teaching, you know that's actually a pretty common phrase in Zen teaching: no gap. The original sound isn't then, right? It's now. How do we become what we seek? Simply by not separating from it. So Sung San, who is the third ancestor in the Zen lineage, says, as part of the Shin Chin Ming, he says, when you seek, you are far away. That's kind of another way of saying no distance. So we separate, and we all do this. It's a very human tendency to separate. And we separate from what we want, from our goals, from our Buddha, from our original mind. And we do this through our wanting and our conceptualization and our chatter and our plans about how to get there. We separate ourselves by hating the distance. A lot of us spend time hating the distance between ourselves and what we long for. But Buddha is reality, and so no distance. Right? How can we be separate in any way from reality? This is it. And this is your zazen. This is our zazen. That seems to me to be the most direct way. Right? So how is your zazen Buddha? No distance. Don't add a distance there. In this view of practice, which we're used to here in Soto Zen, in this view of spiritual practice, you aren't on a journey toward enlightenment. You are allowing enlightenment to unfold, what is already fundamental. Does that make sense? So you're not looking forward to the time when you become when, right? The starting place is now. Reality has no gaps in it. Uchiyama Roshi, a name I know a lot of you know, that's Shohaku Okumura's transmission teacher. Zazen is our most venerable and our only true teacher. Zazen is our most venerable and only true teacher. So there, I mean, that really is saying your zazen is Buddha. That's the teacher right there. It's also the Dharma and the Sangha, but that's another talk. Those are actually really strong words from somebody who is a teacher. Zazen is your most venerable. So in our meditation, in our zazen, we're letting go of our small self. And I hesitate to use those words because small self isn't different than big self. Right? Those are the same thing. But for the sake of hopefully clarity, we'll talk about it that way. And so small self means the self that's based on our agenda, our complaining self, our past, our future, our plans, I don't know, hopes, regrets, aspirations, whatever. We all know that self. We could say ego self, I suppose. It's the part of us that's based on our preferences and our narrative, right, about who we are, who we've been, where we're going, who we want to be. And in zazen, when we find that we're indulging the narrative in whatever way, we let go of it. Right? And we return to just immediate experience. We're going from a place of self to a place of non-self. Or you could say small self to big self. Moment after moment, that's the practice. Right? Over and over. And so this letting go of this sort of limited version of our life, and that limited version is at best a partial truth. Right? Who I am, what my characteristics are, where I'm going. At very best, it's a partial truth. And at worst, it's a pretty nasty lie. I don't know about you guys, but that's how it feels. I mean, really, it's such a small thing, right, compared to the night sky. So doing zazen is really choosing to become a disciple of truth, right? You recognize that that small version of you is ultimately untrue. I mean, at best, it's limited, filtered truth. But you recognize it as being untrue. And so when you release that, when you let go of indulging that, you really are disciplining yourself to reality, right? To truth. I'm just going to let go of that which isn't, to come back to that which is. If it isn't true, abandon it. Right? If it's too small, to hold everything, abandon it. Let it go. Right? Let it go. And that raises a very interesting question that a lot of us ask at some point or another, which is, when that small, chattering version of self is not there, what is left? Right? That's a kind of central Zen koan from the very beginning. When that little version of you, can you let it go? Who's left? That's a really, really good question. It's one of those gates we all get to walk through at some point in our practice. I strongly encourage you to engage with that question. I strongly encourage you to explore that question, really, wholeheartedly. When that small self is quiet for even that length of time, 2 seconds, 3 seconds, who's left? I mean, really, look at that very closely. What is there? Does it have any edges or boundaries? I don't know. You know, look at that, please. So from the book that I mentioned, Maizumi Roshi, Appreciate Your Life, in that chapter that I've been so inspired by, Your Zazen is Buddha's Zazen, he says, have faith in the fact that your Zazen is the Zazen of the Buddhas and ancestors. You don't need to worry about anything. Just sit and appreciate that your Zazen is Buddha's Zazen. Boy, think of how that would change our experience of meditation if actually your goal was to sit and appreciate. Wouldn't that be something you'd really look forward to? I can hardly wait to do it. That feels good. Instead of, oh, this is that thing I have to do for half an hour a day. Oh, it's kind of a drag, but it makes me a good boy, blah, blah, blah. Maybe that's just me. You don't need to worry about anything. Just sit and appreciate that your Zazen is Buddha's Zazen. In other words, it is not you that is sitting. It is Buddha. The way is perfectly manifesting right here, always here, as your life. Realization, or enlightenment, is nothing but becoming aware of this fact. Don't discriminate between yourself and Buddha, between your life and the intrinsically enlightened life. Your Zazen is the most precious Dharma. Please sit in this way. Please do not chase after something else, but appreciate this very life, all the activities of life, as the manifestation of realization. There's a real warmth and encouraging feel to those words for me that I really appreciate and I come back to a lot. So I was at a wedding reception recently, 2 months ago now, I think? Maybe 3 months ago. It's summertime, so time goes really fast, right? And I was sitting at a table, and I ended up being seated next to a couple, and the husband was an older fellow who, through the course of conversation, found out that I was a priest here at Zen Center. And he said, my wife and I used to sit at Zen Center many years ago, back in the early 80s, when Katagiri, you know, was still the abbot. And they gave the talks on Saturday. And there was a big crowd there in the Zendo. And so he was telling me the story of what he remembered. I guess he came pretty regularly for quite a while, but this is what stuck with him after all these years. He said, we showed up on Saturday, and, you know, the Zendo was crowded, and the founders hall was crowded, and there was people up the stairs, and the place was packed, you know. And we used to do the Sunday talk much more formally than we do now. There was the bowing cushion here, and Roshi would come in and do prostrations and offer incense. Some of you I know remember that. And then come around and do prostrations again, and then do the sitting. So there's quite a bit of, in a sense, there's quite a bit of framing of the talk. There's like a ritual before the talk begins, which is really cool. Actually, I think that's really cool. But anyway, so he comes in and he does his bows and he offers his incense and he sits down. He's adjusting his robes, you know, and he leans side to side and finally finds his center. And he's just sort of sitting there and pauses for a really long moment, and he looks off to his right and says, nothing to know. And then he looks off to his left and says, nothing to know. And then he just giggles, and then he opens his notes and starts to give the talk. So, of course, the guy doesn't remember the talk. Who knows? Right? He probably spent hours and hours preparing this talk in this foreign language meticulously. But it's a wonderful story, and this guy had such a warm feeling, you could tell, in him when he was telling this story about how Roshi carried himself and how he obviously offered the sort of spur of the moment. Everything I'm about to say is not the point. There's nothing to know. You don't have to grab onto it. That's kind of another way of saying no gap, really, right? You know? Don't think that what I'm about to say is the thing, that if you could somehow remember it, then you'd be, right? You'd have it. Because you see how we start then from a place of distance. I'm lacking, and the thing you're going to give me will be the thing that fills me up. So it's almost like there's nothing to know. You're there. I'm about to ruin it by talking for 45 minutes. Which is often how I feel, actually. I feel that way oftentimes when I'm giving a talk, especially after Zazen. I think, oh, geez, no, don't say anything. It's perfect as it is, you know. And what do they say? Is it Huxley who said, after silence, music is best? So I think, well, then we can at least have Leo, who plays something wonderful for us. And I say, oh, good, now for sure don't say anything. Anyway. So this idea of no distance is something that pervades Zen teaching. And the no distance idea, you know, our Zazen being Buddha, isn't limited to Buddha. You know, in Zen, for those of us here today who are new, we tend to use the word Buddha in a lot of different ways. So don't be confused. We're referring to the historical person, right, the guy who lived 2,500 years ago in northern India. But Buddha is also another kind of shorthand way of referring to just awakeness, awareness, consciousness itself, right? Your Zazen is Buddha. And our practice, even if you're here for the very first time, is thought to verify all of those teachers, from the historical Buddha through 2,500 years, all the way down to you. There is no gap there. Right? It is your practice that brings that alive right now. Because you're the only one here. Right? It is your Zazen. There is no one else's Zazen. There is no other moment. There's no other person. There's nothing else happening. At all. Other than your Zazen. That's what's happening. All that stuff is coming alive. Because you're here doing it. So it verifies. It verifies Buddha and Bodhidharma and Katagiri and Suzuki and Tim, all those people. So this moment is said, and all of our choices in this moment are said to be absolutely dependent on and interconnected with every other moment. We understand that from the teaching of interconnectedness. So we understand that our decisions now are based on all of our past experience, right? All of our past karma. We get that. That's true. And at the very same time, this moment is said to be completely unique, completely unconditioned, the only moment that is, right? So you are completely defined by your past self, and you are absolutely free from your past self, simultaneously. That those things are not mutually exclusive. One isn't 50% true, and the other 50% true. They're both 100% true. If your brain spits that out and doesn't like it, that's fine. My brain has a tendency to spit that out too. But I would suggest to you that perhaps there's another part of you that doesn't spit it out, that actually understands from felt experience that is the nature of your life. We are absolutely conditioned by all that we have done. Connected to the past, connected to the future. But increasingly, as practice goes on for a lot of us, we have more and more direct experience of knowing that our true nature is unconditioned, completely unconditioned, totally unstained, right? Completely unformed. That's another way of working with who's left in my Zazen when Martin shuts up. Kind of thing, right? That's true. Martin is real. I know this body. I know where I'm going to go home today. I know which car I drove. All those things are true. I remember my childhood. I know what my dreams are for the future. Sure. That's very, very true, right? It's an expression of everything. At the same time, there's sure a lot more going on than that, right? And my chance to not be defined by anything I've ever done is not. Which is true for all of us. Right? It's never a negation of the past. It's never an irresponsible sort of, you know what I'm saying, right? It's more of being so clear in our moment-to-moment experience of both of the aspects of our existence, that which is defined and conditioned and that which is forever unconditioned. When we look really closely at that, we have a sense of that freedom. We have a sense of that unlimited nature of the mind. And that is one of the fruits of practice that comes to us. So anyway, in a sense, this idea of your Buddha being Zazen, or your Zazen being Buddha, you could say it the other way, too. Sure. or the idea that you are fundamentally still, that you are fundamentally unstained, is an exercise in faith. That's an exercise in faith. I mean, Maizumi uses the word have faith in the fact that your Zazen is the Zazen of the Buddhas. So we don't always feel, of course, like our Zazen is that lofty. And we're asked to have faith that that is true. And in Buddhist practice, faith is something that we can borrow from our teachers until we verify it ourselves through our own experience. Faith is always expected to be verified. And I know that I'm giving this talk at a Zen center, which means some of us here have baggage around the word faith. That would include myself probably a decade ago. I've done a lot of work around that word. And we sometimes think that faith doesn't really have a place in our lives or in Zen practice. And if that is true for you, then don't worry about it. Let go of that word. Use something else. Use deep trust or something that works for you. But, you know, I guess the way I've always used those words, trust is more like, you know, if my wife says she's going to pick me up at 11:15, I trust she's going to pick me up at 11:15. That's based on my past experience. She's extremely reliable. There's a chance she won't be here at 11:15. There'll be red lights or a flat tire or one of those things that prevents her from being here, right? So trust, that seems like. Faith always feels like something, for me anyway, very, very big. It's more related to like, I have faith when I open my mouth, the next breath will be there. Or when I eat my lunch, I trust that this body will know what to do with that, to turn that into energy that sustains my life. I don't understand it. I don't get how that works. But based on many, many meals of experience, I trust, I have faith, right, that that's going to happen. It's the dimension of our life, at least for me, that doesn't fit inside my head, but happens anyway. It's the sun coming up tomorrow type of thing, you know? So the reason I'm using that word, I'm sticking with Maizumi's word faith. I like it. I like reclaiming that word for myself. And I think that's the level of our life that we're talking about when we say our Zazen is Buddha. It is something that we don't understand in our brain, but we understand in a deeper sense. And I'm not sure what else to say about that. But I also think that's why we come to Zen practice. I don't think we come to spiritual practice because we want trust. I think we come because we want something much bigger than that. You know, to really put underneath your life, to something foundational that you never have to, do you know what I mean? Something very, very deep. Something much, much bigger than me. Bigger even than my past experience, right? Something, I don't know what's, I want to say cellular or something like that, but something bigger than that. So, there's a short poem I'll read for you called Faith. Faith is in you whenever you look at a dewdrop or a falling leaf and know that they are because they have to be. Even if you close your eyes and dream up things, the world will remain as it has always been, and the leaf will be carried by the waters of the river. You have faith also when you hurt your foot against a sharp rock, and you know that rocks are there to hurt our feet. See the long shadow that is cast by the tree? We and trees throw shadows on the earth. What has no shadow has no strength to live. So faith in Zen practice is said to be faith in things as it is. So rocks and leaves and dewdrops and a foot healing from its wound. And that's really all. There's really nothing bigger to have faith in Zen practice. And all of those dimensions of faith are verified by our own universal experience of being alive on the earth. Right? That excludes no one. You can't even really say belief there. You don't believe in leaves and rocks. Do you know what I mean? But part of the human experience is dashing your foot against a stone, having the experience of pain, having the foot heal. That's something much deeper than belief, right? We wouldn't normally say belief in that context. I also notice I would never really say, I believe that I love you, honey. Right? I would say, I love you, honey. There's something that goes way deeper than belief, right? So our teachers here with this, your Zazen is Buddha, are not asking you to believe it. Belief is fine. I mean, that's fine. Good. But that's not what they're asking you to do. They're asking you to have faith in it, the way you have faith in a leaf or a stone, or the fact that if you cut yourself, your finger will know how to create cells that will heal it. And in 3 weeks, it'll be back to being normal again. That's pretty cool. So I think it's pronounced Thin Thin. She's a contemporary Dharma teacher in Burma. It's T-H-Y-N-N. T-H-Y-N-N. I would guess Thin Thin. Freedom is not just an end result. It is not something that awaits us at the end of our endeavor. Freedom is instantaneous, right now, from the very beginning. We can be free in the very process of the search, in experiencing, in every step along the way. And she too, in the Song of the Grass Roof Hermitage, which we tend to quote a lot around here, I notice. It's a good poem. In the part of the poem where he's instructing us in our meditation, in our zazen, says, turn around the light to shine within, then just return. The vast, inconceivable source can't be faced or turned away from. Meet the ancestral teachers and be familiar with their instruction. Bind grasses to build a hut and don't give up. Let go of hundreds of years and relax completely. Open your hands and walk innocent. The vast, inconceivable source can't be faced or turned away from. Do you see how that cuts off our desire to seek? Right? So if we're looking for Buddha or our enlightened experience down the road or God or whatever word we want to use around that, we immediately are finding ourselves not there, and then we're wanting a direction in which to go so that I can, right? In which direction do I go to find Buddha? It can't be faced or turned away from. That's a fascinating turn of phrase, isn't it? You can't face it. You can't not face it. He's completely short-circuiting the desire or the idea we have of there is a place to go and a thing to get. You can't not have it. You also can't have it, right? You can't face it. It's like air. Like, so face the air in the room. Now turn away from it. You can't. You're doing both simultaneously. It's like it completely short-circuits the brain. I love it. And there's something actually really reassuring about that. It's almost like he's saying, it's okay. It's okay. No one can tell you in which direction it is. You don't even have to worry about that. Right? Your Zazen is Buddha. There you are. And yet he does say, be familiar with the teachings, right? Build a hut, which is his metaphor for zazen. Do the practice. Don't give up. Don't give up. He's acknowledging it's hard. You've got to do it every day. Do your retreats. This is our thing. Don't give up. But within that not giving up, it's letting go of hundreds of years. Letting go of hundreds of years. That's how big the burden is we all have to put down, right? Doesn't it feel that way to you sometimes? Like, if I could just let go of all of my karma, and sometimes you think, God, it's way bigger than how old I am. It feels like hundreds of years I'm carrying. You know? In the Abrahamic traditions, they always talk about seven generations is how long. They don't use the word karma, but that's sort of a sins of the father type of deal that you inherit. That, boy, it sure feels that way to me sometimes. You know, that you feel like, oh yeah, I'm carrying this, and I know this isn't mine, this belongs to mom and dad, but they didn't learn it belonged to grandma and grandpa, and I know they didn't invent it, it belonged to... And you're just, you know, it's like you, it's your genetic predisposition, the things that you're predisposed to in your body, but also emotionally, also mentally, and it does feel like you're carrying this huge thing that isn't yours, and yet here it is, it's in your life, you have to see it, you have to wake up to it, you have to process that and let it go. So that image, letting go of hundreds of years, boy, that feels real to me. Relax completely. Having faith that my zazen is Buddha involves me having to relax completely. Because there's just that one little constricted part of me, that holding part of me, that grasping part that doesn't quite want to buy it. It's suspicious of that type of teaching, right? I don't know. Maybe it's a Midwestern thing. I'm always suspicious of news that's too good. You know, if news is 60% good, I'm on board. If it's all the way good, I'm like, wait for the other shoe to drop. Is sort of my instinctive relationship with that. I'm not sure what that is. It is funny though. Open your hands and walk innocent. So again, it is about taking total responsibility for exactly who we are. All of everything we've done, all of those generations, yeah, we are all of that. And at the same time, in that moment we let it go. Our hands are open. There is no thought I'm grasping. There's no emotion I'm grasping. There's no agenda I'm grasping. There's no version of reality I'm grasping. There's not Zen I'm grasping, right? I'm certainly not grasping Zazen, whatever that may be. My hands are wide open. I'm innocent. I'm completely unmarked. In every moment, free and innocent. Wide open. So, that's really our spiritual security in Zen practice. I've read about four or five different passages from Katagiri's writings that talk about this in different ways. But a lot of us come to practice thinking that security is something. It's like a feeling you have that you might get someday, and it will be really good, and it'll never go away. It sounds funny when we say it that way, but that's kind of what's in the back of your head, right? I mean, I associate security with nothing bad happening, right? I mean, I'm in a place that I like, and I'm comfortable, and my stomach is full, and the people that I like are around me, and nobody that I don't like is around me, and that just doesn't change. That's security. Awesome. So all I've got to do is just arrange for that to happen, and I'm set. Which is about 95% of what I actually try to do during the course of the day. In some way or another, directly or indirectly, what I'm mostly trying to do is set up circumstance such that I don't suffer. And I base that on trying to be able to successfully manipulate, well, all of you. Really, right? The contents of my experience. You know, if I could just have... It's very human. I mean, we just do that. It is sort of funny and really sad, too. I don't know how it's both. But that's Buddhism 101, too, right? That the reason that doesn't work is that all things are changing all the time. Even if you could somehow manage to line up the perfect space at the perfect temperature with the full belly and all the people you love, all those things are changing. Changing, changing, right? So that essentially trying to find security that way is a fool's errand. It's really heart-wrenching for us to know that, but it's ultimately a fool's errand. And the way we talk about spiritual security, and we Katagiri much more frequently talked about it, was our ability to be with things as they actually are. this is what actually is. If you can stand up straight in the middle of things as they actually are, I mean, if you think about it, everything's fine. You have no problem because this is how things actually are, and you're sitting upright in the middle of it. It's based on your ability, your flexibility, your open-heartedness to be with what is, right? It's really the only thing you can have any influence over whatsoever anyway, is your own consciousness. I remind myself of that teaching a lot because it's tough for me. There are just certain moments that are a lot easier to be with than others. There are really some that I just, wow, I know I would be at peace if I could just be okay with this, and I just can't be okay with this. And then Tim told me, well, then just be okay with that. Which, you know, at first I thought, well, that's kind of a nonsense answer. It's not a nonsense answer. That's a really good answer. So for those of you who are like, you know, Zen students, you're like, I'm a Zen student, you naturally want to be a good Zen student, right? And so a good Zen student maybe looks a certain way or acts a certain way, talks a certain way. And so in that moment when you're in the traffic jam and you really grow to it being the traffic jam, you think, oh, a good Zen student wouldn't be upset in a traffic jam. So now you've got two things going on. You've got the initial suffering over, ah, I hate the traffic jam, plus the, I'm not doing well at this. I'm a bad Zen student. I hope Tim doesn't find out. Well, you know, he's just saying when you're upset in the traffic jam, can you be okay with being upset in the traffic jam? It's sort of brilliant, actually, what he's saying, because he's saying the same thing. Like, you're totally short-circuiting the idea that it should be different. If what's actually happening is you upset in traffic jam, and that's fine. Of course, the trick is that all of a sudden you're not upset in the traffic jam anymore. It's quite brilliant. It's very simple and quite brilliant. So, at the end of the last couple lines of Fukan Zazengi, Dogen Zenji says, devote your energies to a way that directly indicates reality. This whole piece is Fukan Zazengi is entirely about Zazen, the practice of Zazen. He's talking entirely about our meditation practice. Devote your energies to a way that directly indicates reality. Accord with the enlightenment of the Buddhas, succeed to the legitimate lineage of the ancestors, samadhi. Continuously perform as such, and you will be such a person. Your treasure store will open of itself, and you will joyfully use it at will. Accord with the enlightenment of the Buddhas. I'm not sure who actually did the translation of that. That's the translation we've had in our chant books for a long time, but accord is a wonderful word choice there. You're waking up to your identity as that, right? You are, to put yourself in accord with is to merge with. There's a sense of unity there. Become the enlightenment that you already are. It isn't something we get, it's something we express, something which is. If you do this practice, you will know this, is what he's saying. Just keep coming back. And it takes, for all of us, it takes persistence, and it takes a gentle type of discipline. I like to say gentle there. I think that's important. We don't force practice. You can sort of see, right, that if our meditation practice isn't a means to an end, you would automatically be patient and gentle with it because it's not trying to get you anywhere, right? I don't know. Does that make sense? You know, if you're in your car and you want to get someplace, the purpose of the car is to get you there and probably as fast as possible. So that's not Zazen. Zazen, it's just be in the car, whether it's moving or not. Just be there. And then all of a sudden, it's totally okay to be on the cushion. And if your heart is very turbulent that day, emotions coming and going, sure, fine, not a problem. And if your mind is racing, it's never present, it's wandering all over the place, yeah, fine. Right? If you're confused and you're angry at the end, yeah, cool, okay, no problem. You can't fail, right? Because the goal isn't to not have thoughts or to have a still heart or to have a whoa experience. If that's not the point, if the point is just to be there, then you can't fail. And so immediately you have a much more open-handed relationship with that practice, right? It isn't. You're not trying to get anywhere. You know what I mean? We're always trying to like be in some sort of transaction with everything. We always want, you know, even in a subtle way, we're always trying to kind of maybe work it a little, whatever that thing is. And this is that one time in our day we can set the timer and sit down and completely open that and really not try to get anything. And what a relief that is. What a beautiful relief that is. It really does feel like putting down hundreds of years. Just for these few minutes today, I'm not going to try to get anything. I'm not going to try to be anything. I'm just going to sit here. There it is. Just awake. Just awareness, right? Busy, still. It's all awake. It's aliveness. It is Buddha. There's nothing I have to try to get to. There's a beautiful, beautiful thing happening there. And of course, we're actually training, right? We're training our heart. We're training our mind. We're training our bodies. That way of being in the world can become our default. That's just sort of how it is. We get better and better at doing that, right? Of just being. Letting just this be enough. Letting just this as it is be completely full. Lacking nothing. No problem. Even if there's problems, they're not a problem. Right? Right? So that's what we do when we sit. Every time we renew that. We renew that faith that our Zazen is Buddha. So in closing, I'll wrap up now, but I want to... What do I want to do? I want to remind you that you are alive. Sitting here this morning, in this room, you are alive. You are feeling, you are thinking. You have sensations coming in, going out. You have thoughts coming in and going out. Isn't that amazing? You are aliveness. That's what you are. You're awake. You are awareness. That is Buddha. Only secondarily do we have aspects of that aliveness that we like or don't. That's cool too. That's fine. That's part of it. But isn't that interesting? But fundamentally, just awake. And you'll notice you can't pin any of it down. You can't grab onto any of it. None of the feelings that come and go you can grab on. None of the sounds leave a mark. Isn't that funny? It just flow. That's what you are. You're awake. And it's changing all the time. Flow, flow, flow. Right? It doesn't have a start. It doesn't have a stop. There it is. You can't possibly be separated from it. That's the message. Dogen says, it's my favorite passage. I say it a lot. When even just one person at one time sits in Zazen, they become imperceptibly one with each and all of the myriad things and permeate completely all time, so that within the limitless universe, throughout past, future, and present, they are performing the eternal and ceaseless work of guiding all beings to enlightenment. Only this is not limited to the practice of sitting alone. The sound that issues from the striking of emptiness is an endless and wondrous voice that resounds before and after the fall of the hammer. So I encourage you to ask yourself if there's a way you can experience this. If there's a way, maybe this idea of Zazen being Buddha is something that you can experiment with. Maybe test me on this. Is that true? Find out if that's true. Maybe there's a way you can touch that in your sitting. And that's all I think I'd like to say this morning. So thank you. Thank you very much. And we have... I do like to talk, don't I? Just a few minutes. We can do a couple of questions or comments or something like that if anybody has any this morning. Yes. Well, that's a good question. I could have. I could have truncated it to your Zazen. I just could have truncated it to you. And actually, when I was up on the landing talking to Wanda, I said, "Do you have room for one more in your intro class? Because I don't really feel like going down there this morning." What she said was, "You know, if it was just an empty room for 45 minutes, they would really think that was awesome." I could have truncated it to no words. It's a good no. It's actually a good question. Your Zazen is yes. I think the reason is because I love the warmth. For me, I love the warmth. There's a feeling to me of your Zazen is Buddha. That makes me feel good. That's the actual answer. I just like how that feels. I'm kind of an emotionally, that's sort of how I'm wired. I'm kind of an emotionally focused person. And so practices and teachings in this traditional that have a little bit of an emotional valence to them tend to go in deeper for me, and that has a warm feeling to me. Actually, for those of, has anybody here read Appreciate Your Life, Maizumi? Are you guys familiar with that book at all? No hands? It's a short book, but it has that kind of energy to it, a very sort of warm kind of feeling to it, and I go for that. I really like that. It's a good question. I could have. Anything else this morning on somebody's mind? All right. Well, thank you very much. We'll have announcements.